Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres on Monday pledged that the organization would continue its support for Beirut and the people of Lebanon in every possible way. Speaking at a briefing on the dire humanitarian crisis affecting the shattered capital since last Tuesday's deadly blast, the UN chief noted that in the midst of multiple challenges, the people had remained generous hosts to many Palestinian and Syrian refugees. And since the explosion, the legendary strength of the people had seen neighbours helping each other, clearing shattered glass from the streets and offering shelter to the homeless by the thousand. Mr. Guterres thanked countries that have already provided tangible aid and urged all to give speedily and generously.
At this time of both sorrow and prolonged frustration, the anger of the Lebanese people is palpable. Their voices must be heard. It is important that a credible and transparent investigation determine the cause of the explosion and bring about the accountability demanded by the Lebanese people. It is also important that reforms be implemented so as to address the needs of the Lebanese people for the longer term.
The UN Human Rights Chief on Monday warned that a new law drafted by parliamentarians in Somalia risks legitimizing child marriage, among other alarming practices. High Commissioner Michelle Bachelet called for legislators not to pass the bill, saying that provisions of what is known as the Sexual Intercourse Related Crimes Law constitute serious breaches of international human rights norms and standards. The Human Rights Office chief said that if passed, it would represent a serious step backwards for the rights of victims of sexual violence in Somalia, in particular women and girls, as well as also sending a worrying signal to other states in the region. She urged MPs to swiftly adopt an earlier 2018 sexual offences bill, unanimously endorsed by the Council of Ministers, and put in place a comprehensive strategy and effective legislation to eliminate practices and harmful gender stereotypes that have a disproportionate negative impact on women and girls. And finally, the International Organization for Migration, IOM, and the International Chamber of Commerce released new employer guidance on Monday to increase protections for migrant workers on the front line of the COVID-19 pandemic. Migrant workers are a crucial part of the global workforce, accounting for around 3.5% of the world's population, the UN Migration Agency said. Businesses of all sizes rely on them, including sectors providing essential commodities and services, including industries which are critical to keeping supplies flowing to consumers. Marina Mankey, head of the IOM Labour Mobility and Human Development Division, pointed out that this included doctors, nurses and other healthcare professionals, but also the agricultural, transport and retail workers that keep our cities and towns functioning. Susceptible to job loss, salary cuts and various health and safety concerns, migrant workers tend to be far from family support networks, frequently face cultural and language barriers, and often lack social protections given to citizens. Matt Wells, UN News.
Yes, we've got John Grant on the horn. This can't be happening Tuesday, and boy, it's interesting what we come up for out of the New York Times and John Grant. John, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
All right. Yes.
Okay.
We got you.
I'm here. Yeah.
So, what's did you get your have a chance to what's on the front headline on the above the fold?
Well, let's see what's on the front headline. There's the top story is right. Governors argue order by Trump imperiled budgets. In other words, Donald Trump and his shenanigans and his the way he operates is. Made this statement that he was going to give, $400 extra to unemployed people.
$300.
He basically has no power to do that. He sort of dumped it on the governors, and they're going, what the hell? We got hurricanes, we got this, we got pandemics, and now you're, as the great president here, just dumping this on us, because you Congress and work it out.
He wants the governors, I think, the skinny that I picked up on that one particular. He wants the governors to kick in $100 additional dollars.
Oh, yeah.
It's up for the $400. He tells everybody it's $400, but at the press conference, and then the news reporters all dig in and say, wait a minute, it's $300 and $100 to the governors. So the states are going broke as it is.
It's once again evidence that he's a lying sack of you know what. But that may be just my personal opinion here.
He probably learned that from Roy Cohn.
I'm sure he did. Yeah, old Roy boy. Yeah, wow, he's a piece of work. I mean, can you imagine the president of the United States was mentored by, of all people on this goddamn planet, Roy Cohn, the most obnoxious, low-crawling, reptilian kind of lawyer one could ever possibly imagine, who was homosexual with AIDS, who would hire homosexual prostitutes and have unsafe sex with them when he was dripping with AIDS? This is the man?
Well...
I'm a little lurid there. I agree. Jesus.
Well, I mean, did he ever really come out? I mean, at least Truman Capote was out.
Whether he came out, he you talk about a pandemic. He was like Typhoid Mary. He was a disgusting person. Nothing against homosexuals. Well, I mean, there are many wonderful homosexuals who were very caring, loving people. This guy was not one of them, you know? And this is the mentor of our president, you know?
Well,
okay, I went off there a little bit, and I'm sorry, okay.
He taught him law. I think this is a legal trick some dodgy lawyer like Cohn would do. He's like, tell the people it's $400, and then tell the governors they got to pay up $100. It's like some mafia thing, you know?
it's putting people between a rock and a hard place, because you have, for some reason, God knows why, this guy has the power of the presidency of the United States, and he can, by just dropping a dime and making some speech, he can put these governors between a rock and a hard place. And he just sits up there and tweets some more and keeps tweeting. And, somehow, he just creates confusion and havoc, and the country, the empire stumbles along, and the rest of the world starts laughing more and more, and
Well, we could go on down these little things that he's doing for the American working class. Another one that Dave Lindorf. Now, listeners, this can't be happening. ThisCan'tBeHappening.net. Lindorf put up an article just a few days ago, a hot one. I read it carefully, and I began to realize it's about the workers don't have to pay federal taxes until January. Actually, it's a deferred payment.
Yeah, they're going to have to eventually pay it. They just don't have it taken out of their salary right now. And it's become very confusing what payroll taxes are. It's basically, if I'm correct, it's just income tax. It's taken by your employer out of your tax, your pay.
And Lindorf pointed out, read the article, listeners. Lindorf, I forgot that part because, man, I've been out of an employer-employee relationship for like 20 years. I hate to say that.
Me too. I haven't 9-to-5 in a long time.
I forgot, but the employer, listeners, now if you're workers, working class out there, I need to remind you that the employer has to match the FICA and the Medicare payment. He has to pay half of that. You pay the other half. He pays half of your income tax, and you pay the other half. That's part of the deal. He takes both of it out and owes it. Now, I happened for a brief period of time had an employee, and I got nailed for that because I didn't know about it. I mean, it took him about 6 months, and then I go, and I had to go to see this guy in the office, and he raked me over, and I was like, well, I never even knew about it. first time I've ever had a business, you know. And but there's a lot of people out there like these. So basically, it's not a tax cut for the worker. It's
not
also
at all
a tax cut for the employer, and they all both of them have to come up with all the money after the January deadline. That's crazy. That he's not doing any. And it's Social Security and Medicare, which I'm on.
Yeah.
I'm on Social Security. I'm like, oh man, they're cutting our throats. You know, they got to keep the money coming in. Jesus, what a mess.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunately another confusing monkey wrench that he throws into the machinery here, and you're wondering what the heck is this about, you know? And he doesn't care. He explains it. He'll look you in the eye and says, "I'm giving you everything away," you know. And you know, nobody can look you in the eye and lie like a dog like Donald Trump. I mean, it's just astonishing to watch.
It is amazing. It really has gotten to,
you know, you have to hand it to him. He is very talented in that sociopathic art, you know. I mean, he's good at it, you know, and I guess all politicians have to have a little of that, you know, especially in circa 2020, you know, when everything is so damn complicated that, you know, how can you have a politician who vies for the presidency of the United States who is an honest man? I mean, it's just impossible to ask, you know. So you have to have a Donald Trump, or we have now a Joe Biden, who, you know, is a lion sack of you-know-what, but he's just hardly as big a one as Donald Trump. He's much more moderate, you know, and he's less obnoxious about it, but he's, you know, the only way you can become president of the United States is to be able to prevaricate and try to please everybody and feel everybody's pain, which of course is an impossible task in such a complicated operation as the United States of America, especially when you have to appease all the money that's at the top. Okay.
Oh, you know, the only thing I hung on Trump in 2016 was that he said that he was going to end the endless war, and he you know, he talked about the senselessness of the invasion of Iraq, and and he hasn't gotten any of that done in 3.5 years, more than 3.5 years, and it's like he's you know, I didn't forgive him. The first clue that I got that he was clueless was Bob Woodward's book when it came out, and Woodward talked about, well, he wrote about what the generals around him were telling him. You know, well, we can't withdraw, we can't close down Germany because it's World War III. We ended up with World War III. We're trying to prevent World War III. And he believed it. That sort of told me he's gullible. But then I got to thinking, I don't think it's just gullibility. I mean, you got the war machine, you got the profits, you got Wall Street. You know, I think it was just too easy just to let it keep on rolling. You know,
well, don't you think he's also in a quandary because, you know, of course, Nixon ran on stopping the war, and it took him 7 years and before it ever ended.
Right.
You know, like, you know, again, a bullshitter, totally, to get elected. So, you know, you have to take his whole arguments that he wants to get out of these places with a big grain of sand. I mean, at the same time, he's sort of in a quandary because, you know, somebody, an authoritarian-style fella like him, depends on having behind him the power of the military, the power of the capacity to really push people around and kill them and destroy things if it comes to that, you know. I mean, these people, authoritarians, would be nothing. They'd be empty suits without that sort of, you know, violence of the military at their beck and call. You know, so, you know, he wants to, you know, assure everybody that, oh yeah, he's tight with the military. Yeah, you know, he could get them on you in a snap of a finger if it's necessary, like in Portland or something. You know, he tried to show his militarist kind of strength in that affair. You know, he ended up doing it like in El Salvador. You send out paramilitary elements, which of course are nowhere near as violent as in El Salvador, fortunately. But nevertheless, paramilitaries who you aren't sure who they were, and they pushed people around, and you know, they slimed my good friend in the face with some toxic, painful slime. Of, I don't know what it was based on, but anyway, meandering here. But at the same time, you know, he alienates some of the military, like going too far. You know, like the thing in Lafayette Park where he dragged the chief, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and finally the guy Maley or whatever his name is, you know, said no, Millet, or I guess that I don't want to be part of that, and backed away and said no. So the military, you know, wants to keep arm's length from him, but at the same time he is the president of the United States, and so there is this tension between the White House, the Trump White House, and the military and the Pentagon, because you know the military in our culture, you know, certainly ever since World War II, has been a straight through line of authority and leadership. You know, the Joint Chiefs does change, but the Pentagon is a pretty much a straight line, you know, going one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas politically, the White House, for instance, in Congress, goes up and down between, you know, Democrats, Republicans, and it changes. And so it's more rocky and it changes a lot, but the through line is the military and the Pentagon. And, you know, we have Vietnam, we have Iraq, we have Afghanistan, which kind of sealed the deal on who we are as imperialists and militarists. And, you know,
we never look, well,
that's
the
just
British,
the way it is, you know. I mean, that's the way it is. You know?
No, I don't think it. I think that's what Donnie said. Donnie said that just a few days ago in one of his these so-called COVID-19 press conferences. There's no doctors there anymore.
Right,
and he
right.
said the way it is, or maybe it was at his golf course in Bedminster, New Jersey.
Oh, probably.
I mean, he was holding a press conference, and it's dizzying. What this? I get dizzied about trying to figure out where he's at from day to day.
Right,
and he said it is what it is.
There you go. Yeah, you can't argue with that, can you? It is
160,000 dead.
Right, the president does. The president of the United States, leader of the free world, says as he's playing golf, "Hey, it is what it is." As Marie Antoinette said, "Let them eat cake." You know, it's like, what the hell?
The guy.
Here we go. I'm hitting again. Yeah.
Well, has, you know, I don't know. Has the Times covered anything about, I'm sure they have, this controversy over the postal system and the elections?
Oh.
I mean, that's another hot button that they're
absolutely, but it's so uncertain what this dribblings of information really means makes it even worse, because it's all part of this, you know, willfully constructed confusion about this coming election, you know, and the Postal Service is right in the middle of it, because mail-in ballot has become the chief confusing item, thanks to Mr. Trump, and, you know, that he's appointed some fellow that he's known in the golf course, I guess, has to lead the thing, and there's now reports of you know, the mail's slowing down. I'm starting to do a concerted observation. I need to get better at it to see if my Netflix DVDs are slowing down at all. Because up until, I mean, they're amazingly fast, this Netflix system.
Yeah.
Where all you know, in the envelope, they read through it and get the scan mark. And so they don't even, you know, the rest of the time somebody can refile it, but they've already got your next movie coming It's all, I mean, it's incredibly fast. And before you know it, you put it in the mailbox one day, and it's like a day later it's there sometimes. It's astonishing how fast it can be. Yeah. Well, I want to see if that slows down, because it'll be noticeable if that slows down. Because that's a system that was really like clockwork, you know, with the Netflix DVD back and forth. So, you know, we'll see if it, you know, I mean, it's...
Because that's all mechanized. Yeah. It's absolutely totally mechanized.
All mechanized.
Hand delivery from the mail center to your door. That's the only part that isn't mechanized, really.
Right. You know, but you can see, and I mean, it's been said ad nauseum by, you know, and say like people, venues like MSNBC, that, you know, that he's injecting all this uncertainty and doubt and confusion, that there's going to be all this fraud that's going to happen, when, you know, I think there has been a 0.001% of real fraud in these areas. But, you know, there is the potential there, clearly. You know, I mean, look at what's happened with the internet and the dark internet, the dark web and everything like that. We can just have the dark post office coming up, you know. And so, you know, you realize, my God, the world is corrupt and full of fraudulent activity. And, you know, it's up, we're up to our neck in fraud and corruption in this culture. And so what's to stop the post office? So, you know, they're naturally creating this, you know, very real doubts and confusions. Of course, we know why they're doing it, so that, you know, they can, if it's beneficial to them, drag the election out and say, see, it's very corrupt, and, you know, basically contribute to the confusion in the state of potential civil war in the United States of America. You know, it's like, it's all there, you know, the narrative is there.
On the C-SPAN's Washington Journal this morning, they were, the main first-hour question was about the post office. Overwhelmingly support for it. They had
absolutely.
They had a guy on, and both Democracy Now! Just Monday had too, the representative of the union, and he pointed out some interesting facts. One was that one fact that really stood out with me, because I hand address some of my stuff, as you well know, and he said that 90% of the mail is all mechanized. You know, it's like 90, very little bit, very little, if any, is hand sorted. Very little, that usually it's the handwritten stuff, and a lot of that, I guess they have scanners that can read if your handwriting's reasonably clear and can read a zip code.
Kind of mind-boggling what the machinery can do. Yeah, absolutely.
But he said that he said the problem is not the the robots, for lack of a better term. He said it's the fact that they are not going to allow any overtime for the workers to make it, and they're cutting back on the
well, that's what's slowing it down. Yeah, right. Well, we put a little tag, you know, Luann put it on their mailbox. I heart my postal delivery man, or something more tight than that. You know, it's like we have it on our mailbox, and we always now make a point of saying hello to our mailman. He looks like, you know, in his short pants, he might be a vet, I don't know. But, you know, nice guy. He delivers the mail every day, comes right to our yard, and, you know, it's amazing. The system.
You can't beat it.
This is a public system. And they got a person who walks it right to this box by your door, you know. It's like they don't even demand, like in a rural area, that you put your mailbox on the road. You know, the guy walks around. He comes right to your door in this area. And, I mean, it's a very human operation. And as you say, it's mechanized in the big centers, but when they fan out to deliver it, it's a very human, you know, labor-intensive thing. Yeah.
I'm very proud to our post woman is named Sid. Her name is Sid. That's not a real name, but I mean that's what we call her. And that's what everybody in the county or on the all well really the county. Everybody calls her Sid. I don't know why. I joked once with her. I said, "Hey, are you related to Sid Vicious? You know, the punk rocker." And she got a big charge out of that. She's older.
Is she young or what? Is she young?
No. She's like, I'd say 55, 60, you know.
Well, so, Sydney can be a woman's name, you know.
I didn't know that. She just laughed. We're very friendly. If we have certified mail, she'll pull up in the drive and beat the horn, and wait.
They're wonderful people, absolutely.
Wait for me to put on some clothes, and walk, get out there to get the guy to the side. And she's just really amazing. She logged 1,000,000 miles on driving her route in the country. Can you imagine that, 1,000,000 miles?
Mm. I mean, she drive one of those cars, the vehicles with the driver's side on the right?
No.
Some male, they have the wheel on the grip.
Right.
Which seemed to be nuts, but not her.
She said, "I just learned how to do it." She could.
Yeah.
She drives on the she sits on the left side up until it gets real, like she's got to drop every, 100 yards or something, and she's learned how to drive on sit on the right hand side of the seat
and
she get to the mailboxes. And she told me
this is such a labor sort of issue, and sort of a ground up kind of issue. Is we need to respect people who do these functions in life.
We don't
because they're not celebrities or they're not hyper-educated, we feel we can dump on them and ignore them and take them for granted. Well, we can't do that anymore. These people are important to our lives.
I have a post office box also.
Right.
And now that's for business purposes primarily. And when I first started it, I opened it when I was campaigning in 2016. And I said, they said, "Okay, now what mail are we going to receive here?" And I said, "My campaign, Radio Free Kansas." And she said, "Okay." And she said, "Okay, we'll just stick anything in there that comes. Is that okay?" And I go, "Yeah." So it's been that way for over 4 years now. Plus now
you're a publishing entity, right?
But once they said we'll just stick anything in there that comes, I go, okay. I haven't registered that with them. But what's funny is that it's just sort of this word of, it's like signing your ballot, your mail-in ballots. You sign, I will not commit fraud, I'm not lying or something like that at the end of it.
Yeah.
And so you take it serious and you don't cheat. And when I get mail from the previous box owner from more than 5 years ago, I will stick it back in the mail slot. I'll go walk it. Just say, there you go.
You don't
write
throw it away. You feed it back. Note on it.
Stick it back in the box. Just stick it back in the slot and let them look at it again, and I know who that person is. That's the joke.
Yeah.
For 6 years ago, I know, I don't know them personally, but I know, that person lives, so-and-so lives over there now. She doesn't live here, wrong address, forward to the, no forwarding address or something. And they forward it to her, they make sure she gets
small town life.
Right. And if you're worried about COVID, worried about being exposed to the bug at our local mail office or post office, you just don't go in there between opening, like 8, I think it opens at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it closes at noon. Now, the hours have been cut back in all these country post offices. That's a bad thing. We all of us are very upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
But you just don't go in first thing in the morning. Why? Because everybody and their aunt and uncle goes there at 8 o'clock, 8:30 to pick up their mail out of their mailboxes and gossip. So I mean, all you got to do is just wait an hour or two, and there won't be anyone in there. You can go in there germ-free, you know, with your mask and get your mail without it. There's no contact really. It's pretty cool, you know. So.
Yeah,
but everybody loves the post office out here in Red State, Kansas. So
as
Donnie's really fucking up. Yeah, they're fucking up. Donnie's fucking up big time on that, man.
Yeah,
really,
and all of his shenanigans, as I say, filters down to, you know, places like you live in where you really care for your post person, and you know it all has a trickle down quality to the system. And you know, we want to stop that trickle down. We want it to be respected. We want it to be run efficiently, you know, but humanely. And we like our post people. You know, we like the fact that, you know, some goddamn robot doesn't come by the house and throw it at you.
Right.
You
know, oh, yeah.
What is it? The drones, you know. You get your book delivered from Barnes & Noble by a drone. Comes over your house and drops it on your head, or drops it in
your
yard. And it gets rained on. You don't even know it's there. You know.
They actually made like a feature story on one of the. I saw it on YouTube, but it was a local TV station bragging. I can't stand it when news organizations brag for corporations. You know.
Oh yeah.
And there's like here's Google, or I think it's Google or Amazon. Delivering school textbooks to kids in the suburbs, you know, using drones. And this thing was like filmed, I think it was filmed by Amazon.
I know. Well, it's like all new technology, you have to write adoringly about it. It's like otherwise you're some lunatic Luddite, you know, from the 17th century or something that didn't like the printing press, you know. It's like, no, enough of this. You know, I'm ready to shoot down those goddamn drones, you know?
Watch it drop it on, and watch the kids stand out there and stupidly try to catch it when it falls. A 10-pound textbook falls down the sky.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. 12 textbooks in a box, it crushed the little guy. You know?
Yeah, I want to film it. No, I don't want Amazon public relations office to do it. I want to go out and film it. You tell me what's going to be delivered, and I want to be out there. Don't tell the kid, you know, or something like that. You know, catch him raw dogging. You know, all these damn companies have public relations firms, and a lot of people, even out here, who read their newspapers. I learned that first when I owned papers. Is that we spend a lot of time. I would have a bushel basket once a week. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. A large waste basket. Solidly full of hundreds of press releases. And your job was to pick which press release and just type it in verbatim.
The lazy newspaper, you know, it's nothing but public relations pieces. Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, you know, the news, one thing I find especially, you know, you're in an area that really affects me as a journalist that, locally here, I'm dealing with my police department and all this kind of stuff. Louie and my wife is dealing with the environmental aspect with the township supervisors. And, you know, there's no newspaper here. There's nothing. No newspaper. All you have these, like, Emily's List or, you know, this kind of thing. Where can I find a house painter? Well, anybody know about a sewer cleaner guy? You know, or
they don't have junk shoppers. You know, where they're just
I mean, there's all sorts of consumer thing. Everything's consumer oriented, public relations. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Public relations has blown out of the water in a local context. All serious journalism. You can't ask the police department here a serious question, they'll look at you and laugh and close the door in your face, you know. The only way they communicate with the people who pay their salaries is via Facebook websites and, you know, all these puff pieces about all their adorable canine dogs and things, you know.
Yeah.
And you look at
you
look at the police webs, the Facebook page, and there's somehow this fashion rage going through the cops where all the males are showing off their beards, you know, the cops with beards, you know, and there's
the
canine dogs and all this. And every once in a while, of course, I catch them on this. You know, they get the video of blacks who have gone into a Target store and robbed them. You know, they had this family of, you know, they had the video camera. And it was like, it was at the top of their Facebook page for like 4 months. And it was like the boogeyman shot. They're out there. Look, watch out, you know. And I wrote them and I said, hey, guys, you know, it's been up there for 4 months. Maybe it's a little racial here, you know. I don't want to cause you any trouble, but I was just, maybe it's time to take that damn thing down, you know.
And they did. Well, good.
Well, it's like, I mean, arrest them, black shop, but don't keep the damn thing up there for 4 months to as a boogeyman thing, you know. I mean, you know, I begin to ask too many questions you don't want me to ask, you know. Take it down.
Now you're on their list.
You know I'm on their list.
Which they keep, which, by the way, they do not have. It's not a public database. That is, if there's any complaint filed against it, we don't let you know about that, you know.
Right. But I guess my point is, in dealing with my wife and this environmental advisory board she's on, is they treat her with all these bureaucratic sort of backslaps, you know, that you would they would not be able to do if there was a serious venue of reporting that she could go to as a whistleblower, you know, leaking something to, and they could write a story saying, hey, you know, what's going on here, you know? But you can't do that because, one thing, everybody hates reporters and journalists nowadays. I don't care if you're left or right. Everybody hates reporters. That's a rule. Because everybody, including the left, they want to be in control of all information about them that is broadcast outward. Of course they do, you know, because we live in a lunatic world of, you know, stark raving lunatics with iPhones, you know. I mean, my God, you know, I don't blame them. You know? It's like, it's a screwed up world we live in, you know.
Well, it's definitely, you got, you know, it's sort of like, I call it drilling down. You know, if I get somebody sends me a link, I'll actually try to read it. And I had this one guy, a good friend, a friend of mine, and he gets duped. He gets drug into the right wing echo chamber. And he sent me an article. He sent it on Facebook. He sent an article that was about, you know, the rioters. You know, they want their student loans, but look what they're burning down Portland. You know, and it's written by a guy named Denise D'Souza. And Denise D'Souza has been a notorious propagandist for like 20 years. Yeah, and he didn't know this. This guy who put this link up is like, this is an authoritative article. You know, these are all bums.
Well, Denise D'Souza is a very smart man. There's no question about it. But, of course, by the way, just to insert this,
he's a convicted felon.
Donald Trump did give him a pardon. He was nailed for some crooked activity with money, and because he's a right-wing pundit, Donald Trump pardoned him.
Pardoned him.
Inexcusable absconding of somebody's money. D'Souza, I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't really, he set up a campaign fund and that was illegal.
Yeah. It was illegal.
Money illegally. It was a campaign front organization that he used to support politicians of his choice, and he got busted at it.
But he was convicted. Really, he was convicted of the crime in court.
Slap on the wrist. I mean, he got convicted. It was a felony.
Yeah.
Slapped on the wrist with house arrest for like 6 months or maybe 2 years or something. But Donnie pardoned him.
Yeah.
And I sent
basically
that back.
Cleaned his record.
But see, this kid that sent me that, okay, he's sort of alt-right. He doesn't know he's alt-right, okay? He's a kid. He's a 25-year-old, 30-year-old kid.
Well, when you get to be an old goat like me, that's a kid. Yeah.
And here's what I did. I said something smart ass. I said, well, you know, and he got mad. He called me a flea bag, the thread. And I got, well, you dumb fucker, you dumb kid. I didn't say that. I thought you dumb ass. So I just went to Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And I just linked the Wikipedia entry to Denise, and sent it back to him. And I said, well, obviously he's out of house arrest. I think he would be better back in house arrest. And
yeah,
sent
right.
the Wikipedia link to this. I sent the Wikipedia link to the kid, the biography of the guy, which included this, these facts about Denise. And he goes, I didn't know that. I'm like going, well, you got to quit this city.
D'Souza does interest. You know, I agreed with Denise D'Souza on one small item. I was the only person that I'm aware of on the left that would ever mention as an interesting fact that the President of the United States, Barack Obama, one, was not an African-American. He was an African and an Irish-American. And that his relationship with his father, who was a socialist that came out of the Mau Mau movement in Kenya, and his stepfather, who taught him how to fight on the streets of Jakarta when he was being bullied, at the same time that his opponent, John McCain, was bombing Asians from 5,000 feet, Barry Obama was being taught how to fight on the streets of Jakarta, and his, I guess, stepfather, I think his mother married this gentleman from Indonesia. His family had their house burned down by the Dutch troops that did atrocious things like in Vietnam to people like that, and had been connected to a guerrilla organization in Indonesia against the Dutch troops. This is like, this guy is president of the United States. I thought, wow, what an insight this guy has, I thought it was, obviously, I understand why it's difficult, but to me, that was actually a positive that Barry Obama had come out of that background. Well, Dinesh D'Souza, being who he is, did a film and a book on exactly those connections that I just talked about as damning Obama, as like, look at this
right.
man, This is the true Obama. This is the guy that was, I don't know, he was doing a birthday thing or what, it's not the information, it's what you do with it was the problem. And he was a slug.
Well, he's just, they did it to in El Salvador, Chile, Bolivia, Argentina. I mean, they pull a communist out of every rock and they say, look,
absolutely,
we've got to bomb
yeah.
the country into the Stone Ages, And
my point was, this made Barack Obama a really interesting person sitting in the White House of all places. Obama was a very savvy politician, and of course he didn't want that broadcast, and I can understand why. But very interesting, still very interesting about him,
Well, Dinesh D'Souza is a piece of shit, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so, I would endorse him. I would give him the same endorsement. He's a piece of shit. And he deserves his conviction as a felon in my book. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got the kid. I got the kid. I got it. You know, I got him with his fantasy.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've left it at that. I just like point, you know, all I was trying to point out without using ad hominems or name calling
or anything.
Just look at the background of this guy and look, it's available on the net. You don't have to read a book or pick up a piece of paper, you know.
Exactly.
People really have a problem nowadays, I think. Yeah, you know, it's not on the net, you know, yeah, and they get so much information from it, a lot of it's slanted. I mean, it's just so bad, you know, that you gotta.
Well, a lot of us get lazy and we go right to Wikipedia, but, you know, come on,
yeah.
Wikipedia. You know, what kind of integrity does Wikipedia have? It all depends on who's loading the crap into it, you know? I mean, it's
I think there is this thing about.
Well, tell me how it works. It seems to be anybody can plug in information. Yeah.
At first, when it started out, and even when you're the first entry about you,
post
a Wikipedia page yourself. Now, here's the funny part of it. Over the years of Wikipedia, people become editors, and they dig up stuff on you, and they'll contest it, and it will say
that they
contest it. So that,
that's what
it's about. So, and if you got any people that are pissed off at you, they can run it through these editors, and if it's factually based, it's sort of a check and balance system that I think in the long run. I mean, I would cite. Here's what I would do. I would not cite it unless you're dealing with an alt-right lunkhead. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know who can? But it's all. Just look at the citations and the references and the footnote numbers, and go click them. Don't be afraid.
I think you're right. If you do you do the work that you should do in looking through the site. Yeah, you can sense what, and then you find reinforcements back up to what you find in Wikipedia, but it can become a lazy man's tool, and it is sort of their pitfalls to that, but otherwise it is incredible. I mean, there's a Wikipedia page on virtually everything. You know, it's probably a Wikipedia page on you, Mike. Do you think so?
No. I've never put one. Here's one thing I know, I've learned is that unless you're into deep into self promotion,
right?
You know, and I think the big Main Street publishers make you do this. They make you put out a .com of your name with your .com. And
a friend of mine who does have a PhD and has written a couple of books, you know, has his own Wikipedia page which he pursued. Yeah.
Right. So if it's self promotion, they'll do it. And
of course,
you're subject.
Why not?
You're subject
this
to the
is America, you know. Hey, yeah.
Yeah, you're subject to the critics at that point. And so I always look. I always consider the source, you know, and try to get young working class people to do the same when they're reading stuff, because, you know, it's like an it's another epidemic of sort, information epidemic. You know, you got to look at it. And I can see why Donnie calls it fake news, but Donnie's, that's too simple. He doesn't get it right. I mean, it's not just
whatever fake news is. There's a lot of it out there. To me, the best source is. I just got somebody criticized me for being uncivil when I wrote somebody that what he had done was bullshit. Well, I don't consider suggesting something is bullshit is uncivil because of Harry Frankfurt's the head of the philosophy department of Harvard wrote a book called On Bullshit, in which he says the most salient feature of American culture is there's so much bullshit. That's the first line.
Yeah.
It's like, and he's right. It's like, let's cut to the chase, call a spade a spade. We are overwhelmed with bullshit, you know, and he distinguishes that from lying. Bullshit is, you know, Donald Trump does both. He lies and he knows damn well it's not true. But at the same time, he just spouts garbage that it doesn't matter whether it's true. It's supporting himself, his narcissistic self. So he just shoots it out there. You know, that's bullshit. That is classic bullshit. And everybody does it. You know, I'm sure I've done it now and then, you know.
Well,
it's like a pandemic in America, you know.
Well, okay, let's do bullshit. We got 10 minutes.
Yeah, let's analyze bullshit.
Let's
work our way through it and let's see what we can do.
Okay, let's work. Do you think Mary Trump, the niece of Donnie?
Yeah, right.
I mean, her book sold 1 million copies in less than, I think,
right?
Like 70
I've heard
hours.
Her on the TV a couple of times. Yeah, yeah.
She's everywhere. I mean, she's
I don't.
Doing
I don't
work
think at, she's a bullshitter. I don't think she's a bullshitter. Why? What's the question?
I mean, what effect would this have, knowing how Mary is saturating the media on everywhere?
Right.
Do you think this would have an effect? Do you think her revelations will have an effect on the diehard Trumpsters?
No.
The Trump people.
I don't think so. I think I don't think so. Some people who are not, quote, diehard Trumpsters, but I think a lot of people, you know, don't care. I mean, look at Franklin Graham. Look at all the, you know, the supposedly, you know, Christians who are delighted with the. You know, they said, well, wait a minute. He's like had, what, 4 wives, and he grabs women by their genitals, and he's proud about it, and he does this, and he does that. You're glad that he's supporting fundamentalism? Of course. We need a tough man to support our religion. Yeah. Oh, okay.
And
that's
okay. New one about Jerry.
Well, they don't care what he does. They don't care what he says. Yeah.
Well, Jerry, the head of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Jr.
Jerry Falwell Jr.
He had
a picture of himself with his pants unbuttoned, drinking. I'm going like, well, maybe that wasn't too smart. You know, why would you have a picture of yourself with your pants unbuttoned? Even if you're not head of a Christian university, that's not a good thing to do. But I don't know the context.
But that won't affect
their. No.
That won't affect their. That won't affect their support for their dear leaders, huh? I think it does.
Not at all. Well, he doesn't have the Teflon coating that Donald Trump has. You know, poor Mr. Falwell Jr. is a mere human. You know, he's he can't get away with that kind of stuff. And he was drinking some dark liquid. He said it was dark water.
Oh, God. He said that was
bourbon
a parody.
Was dark water. Yeah. Okay. Dark water?
He said that was a. He was doing a parody off of some TV or movie.
I mean, with his pants down or something or what?
Yeah, some off Trailer Park Boys or something. I had to drill down to find that. His.
Oh, maybe
yes,
was he pretending to be black or something with his pants around his?
No, I don't know. I don't. I've never watched. It's supposed to be a comedy show. I've never watched it.
Oh,
that's what he
I missed
pulled that.
That. Yeah.
You might say he pulled that out of his pants as an excuse. You
I,
know what I mean?
Well, I did drive when I drove back to Philly from. Charlottesville, Virginia. After I dropped in there,
yeah.
I took the back roads, and suddenly I'm in Lynchburg. You know, and my God! And I said, "Look at this university; it's everywhere. My God, it is a massive sort of institution."
Is it really?
Oh,
it's huge.
Huge.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, the Falwell College, whatever it's called, I forget. But you know. And I hate to pick on the South, you know, but how did it get a name like Lynchburg? I don't want to be changing the name of a town, like knocking down a Confederate statue. If that's the name they want in their town, that's fine. But I guess it was probably named after a Mr. Lynch, you know.
Yeah.
I would hope that's the coincidence. I would hope it wasn't that, yeah, we had more lynchings than every other town, so we called ourselves Lynchburg, you know. I don't think that's the case.
I've heard Liberty University is a very big place. It's not just little.
I was astonished. It was just everywhere.
Yeah, it's a local economy. They've got the Lynchburg villagers, love the business. Yeah. You never can tell about America. I'll tell you that for sure. But I think this, these revelations from Mary Trump have a deleterious effect on Donald Trump's reputation among his believers. I do think that because I really do. I think a lot of relatives.
Good.
A lot of people go, well, I got relatives who, you know, can't stand me, but they're, you know, at least they'll put up with me. But to go to the length of writing a book.
Unconditional love, we have to put up with Mike.
Right. And I'm not going to write a book about him, you know, because it's, you know.
right, of course.
There's not that much dirt, to be honest, that anyone cares about. But,
yeah, I could write a book about my old man, but I'm not going to do that.
You ought to. How you handle it.
Well,
it would have to be
a comedy. It has to be a comedy.
Definitely. I mean,
a dark comedy.
Yeah. I mean, you've told so many great stories about it with this Japanese bone, you know.
Oh, God, yes. It's not, no, you got it wrong there, Mike. It's not the Japanese bone. It's the Jap bone.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we're talking about the 1940s and how we looked at those little yellow people over there, you know. This was not a friendly view, you know. It was the Japs.
We've only got 2.5 minutes. And this is something I got to. People constantly downplay the fact that 1 in 2 Americans probably are related to a Ku Klux Klanman, white people, and most of all your grandparents and on back were probably just either closet racist it was just not nice. But what did your father think of the atom bombs? Because this is the anniversary last week.
You've asked the question here. My father made it clear that. You little runts here, the three of you boys, would never be around probably if I was scheduled to drive my PT boat into Tokyo Harbor. And let me tell you, boys, I did not want to do that. And FDR, a man who my father hated the day he died, was glad that FDR dropped the big one, you know. They started it. Those little yellow bastards, they started it, and we finished it. And here you boys are. You should be grateful for your lives. And, you know, here I am, known as a kid, I was known as Bottlehead. Here I am, little Bottlehead, listening to this, you know. And,
Dad.
Good point there, good point, you know. So, you know, when I get into a rather narcissistic mood, I say, well, that's what my dad said. Thank God for the A-bomb, you know. And Paul Fussell, a good, very good friend of mine, is now dad, who was a World War II vet, great writer in Philadelphia, Paul Fussell. He wrote an essay called Thank God for the A-bomb. And that was the point. That was exactly the point. It's all ironic.
We gotta leave it.
Let's understand.
We gotta leave it with that. John Grant.
Okay, take care.